All right, Tamila, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm really happy that we had some time to talk, because I've always been interested in what's been going on in Crimea and something dear to my heart. When I was a Fulbright grantee, I was in Sevastopol, and so I have photos from my days there before Russia came in and occupied it. And we're going to talk about what's going on there right now with Crimean Tatars. And then we're also going to talk about your role as the permanent representative of the president of Ukraine to Crimea as well. But before we get into that stuff, I really want to ask you about how you are doing personally, because you're in Kyiv and you all have been under these massive Russian missile attacks and things like that, and you're dealing with this difficult work of really being in touch with Crimea during this occupation. So personally, like, how are you able to handle this mentally?
Thank you for asking me. Of course, I am more or less okay. I'm good because now I am in Kyiv. I am not on the missile attacks, what we have, of course, every day, unfortunately. I work with the issue of Crimea during 10 years. That is why it's very difficult emotionally, because I don't have possibility to visit my relatives in Crimea, and I don't visit Crimea more than 10 years. And of course, it's very difficult emotionally for me personally as a Crimean Tatar or Ukrainian citizens, and mostly my friends feeling like me. But now I'm more or less in safe place. That is why I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And even at a basic level, we hear about Crimea and Tatars, but we really don't have an understanding of your people. So just tell us about who the Crimean Tatars are.
Crimean Tatars, it's indigenous population of Crimea and Ukraine. And actually, Ukraine is recognized Crimean Tatars as the indigenous population, which is formed in Crimea during many centuries ago. It's a Sunni people, Muslim people. It's a Turks people, not a Slavic, but Turks, and formed in Crimea in 14th centuries. Crimean Tatars have a own state during more than five centuries. It's a Crimean Tatar Khanate in the city of Bakhchisarai in Crimea. In 1783, Crimean Tatar Khanate is destroyed by Russian Empire, and it's the first stage of colonization of Crimea Peninsula, and a first stage of erasing identity of Crimean Tatar people. Crimean Tatar people are deported by Stalin regime, Soviet Union regime, in 1944. It's a genocide practice of Soviet Union at the 20th century, and many people are died during this deportation time. That is why now we have only near 350,000 people, which is mostly live in Crimea. But because of occupation, many of Crimean Tatar people had to flee Crimea Peninsula and now live in the mainland of Ukraine, or, for example, in the third countries, in Turkey, in Kazakhstan, in United States, in different European countries. If it's
short. Yeah, because, you know, before the Russians and colonized the Crimean Peninsula, somewhere between 80 and 90% of the population consisted of Tatars, right? And then, as you said earlier, there's the Soviet authorities basically began this ethnic cleansing process and began deporting the Crimean Tatars, you know, out of the land. And you have your own family history is a part of that as well. But before, so I just want to get people a basic rundown of this. But I really want to talk to you about the role of your office and really talk about the oppression Crimean Tatars deal with, right? So one, because right now what's happening, first of all, and I'm reading from this article from opendemocracy.net, and it talks about the fact that under current Russian occupation since 2014, Russians are being resettled into the population, into the peninsula, and as you said, Crimean Tatars are being forced out, and then you have a whole bunch of repressions on language. You know, and Crimean Tatar media was completely oppressed and essentially wiped out. So just tell us about how difficult it is for Tatars living on the peninsula right now under a Russian occupation.
Thank you for your question. Actually, our office of the Mission and Crimea Platform National Office, we work a lot with the issue of human rights. We monitor all situation in peninsula. We communicate with the Ukrainian citizens, of course. We help with getting different documents and different services from Ukrainian state. But especially after full-scale invasion, we start to prepare all this strategic policy document for our Ukrainian state about a future of Crimea. Because we understand that at one moment we deoccupied territory of Crimea and another territories of Ukraine, temporary occupied territories of Ukraine. And we must be ready for all these processes because Crimea lived under occupation during 10 years. It's a lot of people who born in Crimea. All legal system of Russian Federation work in Crimea. That is why we need to work with issue of courts, with issue of documentation, with verifying all this documentation, because according to Ukrainian law, we do not recognize all documents which is issued in Crimea. But mostly people have this document because after 2014, life in Crimea do not stop. People born, people died, people have marriages, they have properties, etc., etc. And of course, we understand that after the occupation, when we liberate territory of Crimea, we need to do something with that. That is why we prepared all this strategic document, all this legislation. We prepared even strategy of economical restoration of Crimea, how it looked like after the occupation. And we understand briefly that we don't need Crimea how it looked like before 2014, but is better economical conditions after the occupation, how we restore, for example, state authorities in Crimea, how we work with the personal reserve, which is we now working on, what we do with the education, for example, with informational sphere, how we restore work of media, Ukrainian media in Crimea. And we prepared all this stuff. Of course, we work with a lot of with the diplomats who work in Ukraine. We work on the level of Crimea Platform. We organize the summits of Crimea Platform. It's a lot of different work, but of course we work a lot with our Ukrainian citizens. And for us, it's really very important to have possibility to communicate with people who live on the ground in Crimea. And for a second part of your question, how is life look like for Crimean Tatar people? From very beginning, I totally agree with you, Russian occupation authorities start to persecute Crimean Tatars people or Ukrainians or politically Ukrainians, even Russian, for example, or Azeri people, etc., etc., only because they say we support Ukraine, we are citizens of Ukraine and we do not support Russian Federation. Crimean Tatar people is very united. We have own representatives bodies, for example, Kurultai, it's like a parliament, and Majlis, it's look like a government of Crimean Tatar people. And this government of Crimean Tatar people are elected during election processes in all territory of Crimea. It's very democracy processes in Crimean Tatar society. And that is why Crimean Tatar people do not support any authoritarian regimes. That is why Crimean Tatar people support all this issue which related to freedom, to human rights, all issue which related to dignity, and of course support Ukrainian territorial integrity. And from very beginning, from 2014, when Russian Federation organized this illegal referendum, Crimean Tatars do not support it. They do not go to this referendum, to another election processes during 10 years of occupation. That is why Crimean Tatar people are persecuted. Mostly people who are killing, people who are in forced disappearance, people who are political prisoners, mostly they are Crimean Tatars. For example, now we have 217 politically motivated criminal persecutions against Crimeans, it's like Crimean political prisoners, and 134 of them are Crimean Tatars from this data. It's a lot. It's majority cases, it's Crimean Tatars. Mostly they now at Russian Federation, people stay in Crimea.
I'm curious about how do you document all this stuff? It has to be difficult because you really can't operate freely there. So you obviously have to depend on people to send you information in the best, in the safest way possible.
Of course, we understand that it's really very difficult to communicate with people, but we, even after full-scale invasion, we communicate. They send us messages to social media, messengers, more safe, of course, for example, Signal or WhatsApp. They send us some emails. And of course, we work a lot with the human rights organization, who during 10 years of occupation, and especially this year, 8 years of occupation before full-scale invasion, they have possibility to travel and visit Crimea. Not openly, of course, not a so-called officially human rights missions, because nobody do not operate in Crimea after 2014 officially in Crimea as a human rights organization. But they visit Crimea and they collect all this evidence, they communicate with the peoples in Crimea, with the lawyers, with the victims, with the families of victims. That is why we have this information, of course, and we communicate with international organizations, for example, UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission, and they also collect this evidence from people who had to flee Crimea via Russia, for example, and then they came here to mainland of Ukraine.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this a recent Amnesty International report that talks about the different repressions that take place under Russian occupation there. And so one part of it includes the eradication of cultural identity and language. And so immediately after the illegal annexation in 2014, Russia imposed its own school curriculum. And that's resulted in like indoctrination and threats against teachers and students and the parents who objected. And they began by dismantling Ukrainian language, then eventually Crimean Tatar language, also religious freedoms. And so it's not, you know, in addition to the, you know, mosques, they've also repressed people who are Jehovah's Witnesses and they consider them to be extremist groups. And then also the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, for example. And so it had about 46 parishes, but in the first year, about 38 of them were shut down. And then by now, all of them are gone, right? And so you have this complete thing where it's straight up Russification. And I don't think in the West we talk about the fact that this is essentially a form of ethnic cleansing in the way, you know, of the population there, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's an Amnesty report. It's not only one report which we have about situation in Crimea, of course, but it's really very good report because they mentioned issue of raising of identity of Crimean Tatar people and Ukrainian identity and persecutions of religious rights in Crimea against Muslim community and Orthodox Church, of course, especially. And unfortunately, Ukrainian Orthodox Church do not operate in Crimea now, fully do not operate. They indoctrinate all educational sphere, and especially they militarize minds of our children in so-called schools or different summer camps. But what we see actually now in Crimea, they do it absolutely at the same time at newly captured territories. And you must understand that all these processes, what they do in Crimea, they transfer it to newly captured territories of Ukraine, for example, Kherson and Zaporizhia. They use the same absolutely playbook what they do in Crimea. Why we actually always mention Crimea? Why we always say that Crimea it's a first step of aggression? And we really understand that because we don't have enough reaction of our international, unfortunately, allies to the situation in 2014 with the occupation of Crimea, we have the situation with the full-scale invasion after 2022. Or for example, what Russia do now in Crimea, the absolutely the same methods Soviet Union Empire do or Russian Empire do in Crimea from 18th centuries. I mentioned Crimean Tatar Khanate, and it destroyed in 1783 by Catherine II. And at 18th centuries, Crimean Tatar people population, it's 95% of people. When they annexed Crimea and start to transfer it and change demographic composition in Crimea, at the moment of 1944, it's only near 30% of Crimean Tatar people. But before, during centuries, Crimean Tatars is majority population in Crimea. In 1944, they deported all Crimean Tatars people, and we don't have any Crimean Tatar person in Crimea in 1944. After deportation. Now, when our international, you know, allies or some experts say, you know, if Crimea is a very difficult case because Crimea is always Russian territory and it's a place of Russian armed glory. But I always say, no, it's not true. It's not a Russian land, but it's land which is colonized during centuries, during 2.5 centuries, yes. And it's a place where Crimean Tatars and to another indigenous population, Karaites and Krimchaks, are formed. And we must to say about Crimea, not about Sevastopol, this port, and Russian armed glory, but about indigenous population, the place where they born and formed.
But why do you think people characterize this as a difficult situation and that they do not accept the fact that this is a Russian colonized land?
Because it's a disinformation campaign during a lot of years, unfortunately, and especially in different European Union countries. For example, when we say about France, they have, these ties between Russian Empire and all these Tsars and France. Or, for example, when we say about Germany, Catherine II, she's German, ethnically German, you know. And what we see now, even after full-scale invasion or 10 years of war in Ukraine, many our international allies, and especially, you know, in a global South countries, in the African continent, in Latin America, in Persian Gulf, in Southeastern Asia, they don't even know about Crimea. We work now a lot with these countries, and they say, you know, we don't know any information about Crimea. Oh, we hear something that it's occupied or next. Now it's Russian land. No, and we need to explain always. We work as historians, you know, and explain for all these countries, especially for global South countries or even Western European Union countries, the history of Crimea, why it's colonized territory, why Russia, it's not an anti-imperial country, but the imperialists. And we need to explain it because mostly they do not understand it.
How's that been going?
It's very difficult, but we're on the right way.
Okay, and so I'm interested in really talking about what's it like for Crimean Tatars who had to flee the peninsula and come to the mainland. I'm curious about the type of trauma that they're experiencing, because I don't know what it would be like. I live in New York and I'm doing a tour right now, you know, talking about Ukraine, interestingly enough. And then some foreign power comes in and take over New York. And I can't go back to my apartment. I can't visit my friends and my family. I have no idea what that's like. And so you have a bunch of yourself even, right? But you have people who are on the mainland. What type of support do Crimean Tatars get who fled? And because I know psychologically it could be traumatized because it's an active ongoing occupation that started 10 years ago. And I just know that going on day to day, it can't be easy living with this reality that you have this foreign colonizer that's actively abusing your people and your land and taking over the place that you live and you were born in.
You know, what Russia now do in Crimea, they do this newly colonization of territory of Crimea. Because what they do in Crimea, they transfer it legally Russian citizens. I don't say about ethnical profiling. I say about citizenship. They transferred people from Russian Federation to Crimea. They use different stimulation program for that. And they transferred near 800,000 people to Crimea. It's a changing of demographic composition of Crimea. And of course, it's a war crime according to international humanitarian law. And as another hand, they pushed from Crimea citizens of Ukraine. Before full-scale invasion, we have officially 55,000 people. It's including Crimean Tatars or another nationalities. But after full-scale invasion, it's even more. We don't have exact number of how many people, especially Crimean Tatar people, had to flee Crimea, fled Crimea, because in our passport, we don't have this identification as a ethnical profiling, ethnicity. All of us are Ukrainian citizens. But mostly people from Crimea, after full-scale invasion, they flee in Crimea via Russia to third countries, to some countries of Central Asia or European Union countries or for Great Britain. Some people, they return to Ukraine, to mainland of Ukraine. Some people, even men, join to Ukrainian armed forces. But of course, it's very emotionally, very difficult when you must to live not in your motherland, because for Crimean Tatar people, this small motherland is very, very important. And this land, it's very important, you know, and it's for me, it's very difficult. I am from Simferopol, from Akhmesjit. My relatives, grandmother, they born in a Bakhchisarai area, and they deported from city of Sevastopol in 1944. And of course, it's difficult when you don't have this possibility, because you know when you have possibility to visit, it's but you don't visit, it's one situation. But when you are blocked, you don't have this chance to see your parents, your home, father, mother home, it's really difficult.
Are your parents there now, or like, or are they on the mainland?
No, they in Crimea, in city of Simferopol. I of course work and speak with them a lot about fleeing Crimea, but they say no, because it's our land, it's our home, and if we are fleeing Crimea, who is staying in Crimea? Only Russians, they ask me, and I fully and totally understand their position, of course. And now you ask about another people. Many people from Crimea who are now or before full-scale invasion live in Kyiv, for example, or Kyiv village, and especially in Bucha or in Irpin, you know, they built their houses, their apartment, and 8 years after they flee in Crimea, their new home in Kyiv village is also occupied, or homes are destroyed. And when I speak with all these people, with Crimean or Crimean Tatars, and they say, we don't know what to do, because 8 years ago, we unfortunately pushed out from Crimea. We now live in the Kyiv region or Kharkiv region. After occupation of Russia, new occupation, but after full-scale invasion, we secondly moved from these territories. What we need to do to stop this aggression?
Yeah, and so you mentioned this number of about 800,000 Russians that have been resettled into Crimea. What do you do with them once Ukraine liberates the peninsula?
You know, it's a very difficult question, honestly speaking, because all these people, they voluntarily joined this crime of colonization. They stay in Crimea absolutely illegally, mostly. I now only few persons who do a request for Ukrainian state authorities to live officially in Crimea. Only few ones. It's one of journalists and another person. It's a lawyer who work with the families of political prisoners. But mostly all these people stay in Crimea illegally. That is why our position, they must to fled Crimea before liberation and deoccupation of Crimea. We understand that according to international law, massive expulsion, it's illegal. That is why we prepared such kind legislation to expel these people, but on individual level. For example, some person do request for Ukrainian state immigration service and say, yes, I need to live to live in Crimea because I have a family, my wife or my husband, it's a Ukrainian citizens, we have a children, and these children is half Ukrainian or even have a Ukrainian birth certificate. That is why we send a request for leave officially in Crimea. But mostly all this colonizer must to flee, of course, Crimea before the occupation. We understand it's very difficult because it's a lot of people, but it's our issue of national security, because in some period of time, Russia could say, we protect Russian citizens. How they say actually it in Donbas region, in Donetsk and Luhansk Oblast, and in Crimea, that they protect their citizens.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to ask you about the transfer of Crimea to Ukraine by Nikita Khrushchev in 1954, and you know, some of this confusion over this story. And I think it goes into your earlier conversation about people saying, well, this is a difficult situation, right? So we know that 1954 Khrushchev transfer happened, but what do we get wrong about that particular moment in history when it comes to Crimea?
You know, it's also propaganda of Soviet Union or Russian Federation, because if you saw for map of mainland of Ukraine and Crimea, you really totally understand this step of Khrushchev. It's not a like a gift of drunk Khrushchev, you know? It's not a gift. It's we have absolutely reasons for that step, because all this infrastructure with the Crimea and mainland of Ukraine, it's explained. And issue of water, for example, because Crimea always have these problems with water. And only after 1960, Ukraine SSR built this North Crimea Channel, only after that, economically, Crimea is could survive, you know. And for example, Crimea do not connect it to Russian Federation, actually, but connected to mainland of Ukraine. And only one connected way now, after 2014, Crimea with Russia, it's actually Kerch Bridge. You know, and we understand, and now our Ukrainian armed forces target this Kerch Bridge from time to time. And we must understand that it's not a civilist infrastructure, not for civilians. It's absolutely military way. It's absolutely military infrastructure for Russian Federation, because they do all this supply chains for Russian armed forces, for their technique, for their people, armed forces, etc., etc. And we understand that if we are destroy this Kerch Bridge, it's possibility to military deoccupation of Crimea.
So after the 2022 invasion in February, I would say before that, honestly, I think a lot of people were not optimistic about Ukraine being able to liberate Crimea. And then people realize, oh, these Ukrainians can actually fight, right? And now I know, as somebody who lives in Ukraine, I feel like this second invasion made Ukrainians feel even more empowered, right? That there is this new jolt of energy that Russians can take land, and then if we have the right support, then we can liberate that land back into Ukrainian hands. And now people are talking about the liberation completely of Luhansk and Donbass, and of course, Kherson and parts of Zaporizhia and elsewhere, but also Crimea. Before, it felt like a distant possibility, but now it's very real.
You know, it's, of course, it's very difficult operation, and we need more weapon for that. But you know, last year is very, very important for Ukrainian armed forces, because many our international partners and special experts, journalists, when they comment our counteroffensive operation on the land, they say it's very slowly, it's more, maybe not very success. But when we say about Black Sea or about Crimea, it's, we have really a lot of success in this region, in Crimea and in the Black Sea. Even thought that we don't have a fleet, but we destroyed quarter of Russian Black Sea fleet. We target all these military ships, military bases in Crimea. We target and destroyed headquarter of Russian Black Sea Fleet in Sevastopol. And this year we continue all these actions in Crimea. And of course, we show for our international allies, and of course for our people in Crimea and who live in a government control area in mainland of Ukraine, that all these successes, and it we have a possibilities to deoccupate. We have a chance to deoccupate Crimea, but for that we need more weapon, more support from our international allies, of course.
So I'm curious about your own family background, because you know, this is not just some job for you. This is a personal history that's very deep for you. And your own family has this history of being deported and then returned to your land. So I'm just curious if you can about that, and you can share that with us.
I'm born really in Uzbekistan, in city of Samarkand, in 1985. When I 5.5 years, I moved from Uzbekistan to Crimea. And I grown up, of course, in Crimea, and I very actively involved in different civil society organizations in Crimea, in the Orange Revolution in Crimea, etc., etc. But you know, my history, it's not very unique, because mostly people in my age, they have absolutely the same story when they grown up in Crimea. Before occupation or after occupation of Crimea in 2014, they moved to mainland of Ukraine, and now many of them are actively involved to issue of Crimea and the occupation of Crimea. But you know, I must to mention very very important question and issue, that after full-scale invasion, we have a lot of people who start to resist in Crimea. And I must to say it, you know, and this issue of resistance in Crimea very connected with issue of action of our military forces on the Kerch Bridge, for example, or military bases in Crimea. Because for people in Crimea, it shows that Ukraine is ready to deoccupy, and they do different actions, not only on political and diplomatically way level, but also on military level. And we know about more than 700 cases such kind protest in Crimea. What people do? Of course, it's not a huge rallies, huge protests in cities in Crimea, of course. But for example, it's some women, female activists, who do yellow and blue manicure on the nails, you know. Some person raise Ukrainian flag. Some person do some post in social media, in the Facebook or some another social media. Some persons poured yellow and blue paint to occupation administration, and a lot of different another cases. And it's very important that after full-scale invasion, after Russia do all these actions and persecutions against people during 8 years or 9 years of occupation, people continue to resist. It's amazing, really amazing what we see now in Crimea. Of course, after all these protests, people are persecuted by Russian occupation authorities. They are arrested or fined to thousands of Russian rebels. They accused to case of discrediting of Russian armed forces only because yellow and blue manicure, you know, it's look like a joke, but it's true. But
it's the way that they persecute their own people in Russia. So
yes, and they do it the same in Crimea, in the occupied territories, absolutely, because they afraid for all activities. For all activities which related to Ukraine, to resistance and support of Ukraine.
Yeah. So, you know, if you had the opportunity to talk to our House Speaker, Mike Johnson, who's been reluctant to introduce legislation to the floor about financing Ukraine, what would you tell them?
Oh, it's a very, very difficult question. But, you know, all these words about supporting of Ukraine, about our dignity, about our freedoms, unfortunately now do not work because we understand it's a policy and all this election processes in the United States. But maybe only one issue, which related maybe not for all Ukraine, but about when we say about Crimea. When people ask me why we must to fight for Crimea, why we must to deoccupy Crimea, I always say that it's not only piece of land. It's not about land. It's also about people. And it's about small indigenous peoples of Ukraine and Crimea, Crimean Tatars. And if we do not deoccupy territory of Crimea, it means that we are erased absolutely, clean up in Crimea. And only possibility to survive for Crimean Tatar people, it's a deoccupation. And if democracy world support, and of course United States, it's a prominent democracy country, state, support all this issue which related to human rights, dignities, and freedoms, you need to support Ukraine and with efforts of deoccupation of Crimea, of course.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds good. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you breaking all this down for us because there's so much to know about Crimea and so few of us really understand it when we're talking about, you know, the liberation of these occupied territories and what it means to support it, and that, you know, Ukraine, in fact, does have indigenous communities in Crimea. Tatars are, you know, a part of it. And so I'm really happy that you took time to talk to me.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for all support, and thank you for all your work. It's really very important. I hear a lot of about you from our friends from United States. Thanks a lot.